From the Center for Investigative Reporting in PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letton. On the night of Sunday, October 8th, the Northern California hills are parched after a long summer. A hot, dry wind is blowing. A woman in Sonoma's wine country calls 911.
What's the address of the emergency?
Hi, we need fire engines out here immediately. I mean, we needed them out here an hour ago.
Thousands of people are in the path of this wildfire.
Do you see a fire?
Yes. What? I had to drive out because I would have died if I stayed.
How big is the fire? Do you know?
How big is the fire?
Huge.
Acres.
Okay.
Hundreds of acres.
Okay. Ma'am, listen.
Nobody's been warned about this.
These would become the deadliest wildfires in California's history. 44 people would die. For weeks, fires burned across 8 counties, including Napa, famous for its vineyards. On the night the fires start, CAL FIRE, the state agency that responds to wildfires, gets call after call.
All night. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, that is really the sound that I remember, is just the phones did not stop ringing. The calls did not stop coming for help.
Unit Chief Annalee Berlew supervises CAL FIRE's Regional Command Center in Napa Valley. It's basically her war room. It smells of coffee and sweat. Two dispatchers answer the phones as fast as they can. They consult a giant map of Northern California pinned to the wall, dotted with magnets. Purple ones stand for medical units, yellow for bulldozers, small red ones for engines, and big red arrows for fire. They deploy these resources using a system that originated in California, one called mutual aid.
Sonoma runs out of resources. What do? They call their neighboring county, Napa County, and ask for them to help. And Napa County would ordinarily say, sure, we'd love to come help you, and sends their resources. That's the normal thing that happens.
Berlew believed the state's mutual aid system would be able to handle whatever nature threw at it. But like the floods in Houston and the hurricanes in Florida and Puerto Rico, climate change has changed the game, making weather events more extreme across the country. So while emergency responders put their lives on the line, are the systems prepared to handle disasters of this magnitude? That's what reporters Lisa Pickoff-White, Suki Lewis, and Marisa Lagos of KQED in San Francisco wanted to find out. After listening to thousands of 911 calls and dispatch recordings and talking to dozens of first responders and state officials and people who barely escape with their lives, they reconstruct what happened the night the fires broke out. Marisa starts us off in the hills above Sonoma County's biggest city, Santa Rosa.
Greg and Christina Wilson spend October 8th puttering around their house. It's close to coffee shops and grocery stores, but from here, all you see are treetops and grassy hillsides.
On Sundays, we hang out at home. You know, I'm always working, so I was probably doing work and watching football, whatever.
They're in their early 50s. She's a mortgage advisor. He's a lawyer. They have a 2-year-old dog, a Shih Tzu named Maximus. Max for short. They live in a tight-knit neighborhood up on a hill where neighbors take time to chat. And after years of work remodeling, the house finally felt fully theirs.
It feels like, you're just in this, you know, serene setting so far away. This is like our dream.
On that Sunday, Christina stands in her new bright kitchen, looking out of the windows.
It was a lot windier than normal, and it was very warm. It was a warm day.
Christina doesn't think much of the wind. But what she doesn't realize is that wind will soon bring fire to her doorstep. Inside the CAL FIRE war room, they're worried that something like that could happen. Suki takes us there, where officials are already on standby.
Firefighters are ready to mobilize because the National Weather Service has issued a red flag warning, the highest alert for fire danger. Then, around 7:30 in the evening, 911 dispatchers get a concerning call.
Fire medical dispatch. Hey, it's County. I'm transferring a caller who's reporting. It sounds like a power line that was arcing.
Okay.
Sir?
Yes.
Go ahead. What is the address of the emergency?
The man tells the dispatcher that winds knocked a power line into a tree.
There are a lot of sparks, and this is a super high fire danger area. So, but the power lines were definitely emitting sparks.
Okay.
What's that?
Yeah. Okay.
The dispatcher says someone is on the way, then makes this a top priority. She consults a computer screen to send the nearest engine out to respond. But the wind keeps picking up. About 20 minutes later, a woman dials 911 to report a transformer blowing miles away.
I'm sorry, tell me again what happened?
Well, it looked like it was a big firework that went off,
okay. But
I'm pretty sure it's a transformer.
All right. We do have the fire department on the way. Stay safe and out of danger.
What's happening here is that high winds are knocking down power lines. These send out sparks, starting little fires. Then as lines go down, the electricity needs to go somewhere, so it gets redistributed. This overloads other lines, creating power surges. Transformers explode, taking down more of the electrical grid.
Power lines are down. Request PG&E. One charge will be addressed in about 20 minutes.
As CAL FIRE gets these reports, they contact PG&E, the local utility company. And together, they have the ability to do a few things. The utility can send out linemen to deal with individual incidents, or shut down power remotely, or a combination of both.
But due to power lines, the northbound shoulder is going to be on fire until PG&E can secure power for us.
On that night, CAL FIRE and PG&E go by procedure, dealing with these incidents one by one, relying on linemen. They can't keep up.
Information, we have multiple 911s ringing and not being able to answer.
This is when you can first hear things getting out of control. It's like a game of whack-a-mole. CAL FIRE's map is getting crowded. They're running out of people to send, even as new fires break out.
Like to the point where CAL FIRE told us they've got no more resources, can't send to anybody.
Okay, cool.
With no one to send to put out all these small fires, two blazes explode almost simultaneously, about 30 miles apart. In the forested hills of Sonoma County, gusts of wind are sweeping up burning tree branches and debris and hurling these embers miles through the air. The blaze starts jumping from one mountain peak to another, leapfrogging valleys, racing through Napa vineyards, and devouring homes across both counties. And it's now rushing toward the city of Santa Rosa, home to 175,000 people.
And for firefighters, it's becoming clear these fires they're facing are of a different order.
Multiple structures involved.
CAL FIRE Captain Jeff Hoag is in the middle of all of this. He's like the voice of God to his troops. All night long, firefighters hear him on the radio, taking their calls and coordinating their response. From the CAL FIRE war room, Hoag sends out a reminder, crackling over the radio.
The priority of the unit is safety of the public, rescue, as well as safety of the rescuer. Do what you can.
Safety for the public. Safety for the rescuer. Do what you can.
What that means is putting out fires isn't the priority anymore. For firefighters, the singular focus is saving human lives, including their own. At 10:30, CAL FIRE starts calling local law enforcement agencies in Napa and Sonoma to initiate evacuations. In this game of telephone, you can hear a lot go wrong.
Hi, it's Michelle.
I need a reverse 911 done.
Okay.
So CAL FIRE needs it for the Calistoga area. Mandatory evacuations.
This CAL FIRE employee is asking a Napa operator for a reverse 911. That's an evacuation alert that can target specific neighborhoods, warning people. Fire is approaching. It calls home phones, but only about half of Americans have landlines these days.
Copy. We'll advise CAL FIRE.
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. What's your question?
Okay. So you say reverse 911. Are you aiming Nixall or?
I need you guys to send out a reverse 911 so we can tell them to evacuate.
Okay. I'm not familiar with what a reverse 911 is. I'm sorry.
This is another one of those places where you can hear the system breaking down. The operator doesn't even know what CAL FIRE is talking about. But that's actually because each county in California, there are 58, uses different technologies with different names to alert people. To CAL FIRE, it's reverse 911. To Napa, it's called Nixle.
I think it's just Nixle. Okay, if it's going out to the public and everyone.
Yeah, it needs to go to all their phones, landline and everything. Mandatory evacuation, okay. Yeah.
In this call, CAL FIRE is requesting an evacuation order, but it still takes an hour before law enforcement officials in Napa issue text alerts to the public. They won't call people on their landlines until the next day. Over the course of the night, delay and confusion happen again and again.
Right, and it didn't just happen in Napa. Back at the home of Christina and Greg Wilson, the phone rings around 10 at night. But it's not Sonoma County officials calling.
Yeah, I got a phone call around 10 o'clock from one of my friends who lives about 3 miles away. And she's like, you know, I see fire in the distance and it looks like it's coming really close.
They look out the window and can see a faint glow of fire. Christina's husband Greg chats with the neighbors and prepares to leave. Just in case, they fill two cars with valuables, a new painting, dog treats for Max. All the while, that fire in the distance, fueled by high winds, is burning much closer. Soon, it's right at the end of their street.
Then all of a sudden, it was like just coming on so close that everybody at the same time decided to leave.
They get in their cars and start driving. Their neighbors are all trying to get out too. And the narrow road is clogged with traffic. Flames surround them.
I was just, thought, let's turn around.
The fire keeps growing as they head back home. And when they get there, their house is on fire too. So they go to the one place where the flames can't reach.
So Greg said, let's just get in the pool. And it made sense because it just did.
In their swimming pool, Christina and Greg are safe from the flames, but not the smoke or the air, superheated to an excess of 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
There was such superheated air that trying to breathe it was so hard.
That air is so hot, it consumes the oxygen before they can catch a breath. It burns their lungs, and it's why Greg's voice sounds so hoarse. Greg holds Maximus, their dog. He squeezes Christina's hand as they dive under the water.
Really, just those first 20 minutes, it's diving down, coming up, sometimes not really getting any air at all, but just saying, okay, I gotta go down again.
They plunge into the freezing cold water again and again, just to get a break from the blaze. The solar panels bubble and burst. Greg watches as their dream home turns to ash. The fire's creating its own weather, whipping debris all over the place. Flying embers hit Maximus in the eye.
And right then, it's like, you have time to hug each other and say, this could be it, honey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I know we did it a couple more times, you know.
It meant the world because, oh my God, because we were all together.
And that was probably why we didn't leave, because I couldn't bear the thought of separating. You know, if we drove down and one of us made it and one of us didn't, I'd rather us be together.
I didn't even think of that. You know, I just didn't think we would have a chance to survive.
It's at this point that authorities send out the first evacuation orders. This call went out at 11:30 p.m.
Attention, Sonoma County residents. There is a large fire off Mark West Springs Road. There are several homes engulfed in flames. We are recommending that you prepare to evacuate your homes and go to safe areas at this point.
That call goes out as the Wilsons are huddling together in the water. Their cell phones on the side of the pool have melted into a pile of metal and splintered glass.
Only about 1,200 people who live in the hills above Santa Rosa received that initial evacuation call. As the fire moves out of the wildlands, racing towards densely populated neighborhoods, most people are asleep in their beds and have no idea what's coming. When we come back, Sugi and Marisa take us into the neighborhoods where people are waking up to a wall of flames. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Reveal is supported by the all-new SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe's brand new system is smaller, faster, stronger than ever before. Completely rebuilt and redesigned with new safeguards against power outages, downed Wi-Fi, cut landlines, bats, hammers, and everything in between. It's the first security system that you might actually call beautiful. You should check it out. And what's remarkable, you still get 24/7 protection for only $15 a month and no contract. But supplies are limited. Visit simplysafe.com/reveal.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting in PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. We're looking at the fires that swept through Northern California's wine country last fall. In all, 44 people lost their lives in the deadliest fires in state history. 172 different blazes broke out across hundreds of miles of Northern California in an area the size of Maryland and Delaware combined. KQED reporters Lisa Pickoff-White, Marisa Lagos, and Suki Lewis are taking us through that first night when crucial decisions were made. We join Suki in the hills above the city of Santa Rosa, where a sheriff's deputy is stumbling through the dark, choking on smoke, trying to get residents to safety.
Sheriff's office!
This is audio from a sheriff deputy's body cam. In the dark, two officers pound on doors, yelling at people to get out.
Come on, she's disabled.
They come across a woman who can't walk.
Let me get her feet. Let me get her feet.
They carry her out of her house to their squad car by her arms and legs.
Watch your leg, watch your leg, watch your leg. Watch your leg, watch your leg.
As the deputy drives out, he can barely see out of his windshield. It's just smoke and embers.
Go, 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 go! Drive! Go!
Rescuers will not get to every door. On this night, at least 8 people will end up dying along this road. At another point in the video, just around midnight, the officer gets on the radio to ask about a neighborhood to the west.
We gotta keep pushing the evacuations as far west as we can.
He's telling dispatchers they need to expand evacuations, pushing towards a neighborhood in Santa Rosa called Fountain Grove.
Fire. You gotta be ready to evacuate all the way to 101 in my mind.
At 1 a.m., this man calls to report a winery in Fountain Grove is on fire.
Winery. I'm talking about, I'm watching it right now. It's burning right towards us.
Okay, I need you to leave the area then.
Despite many calls like this, it would be another hour, nearly 2 a.m., before authorities start calling people in Fountain Grove and telling them to evacuate. Then the fire rips across Highway 101, a 6-lane freeway that runs through the middle of the city. Residents on the other side of that freeway, in Coffee Park, a dense neighborhood well within Santa Rosa City proper, wake up to flames in the middle of the night.
The field is on fire. It's moving quick. We're about
okay, ma'am, I need you to pause. Just a moment.
Okay.
I know you're scared. I'm sorry I have to be short with you. We just have over 50 fires going on right now.
This fire has been headed toward their homes for 4 hours. But as Marisa and I found out, few people here get alerts of any kind.
Sonoma officials could have notified every single person with a cell phone in that area through the same kind of system that takes over your phone with those loud amber alerts. But that wasn't their procedure. Instead, they chose to send another type of alert to specific areas that reached fewer people. They did this in two ways. Through text and emails, using a system that people have to sign up for ahead of time. The county doesn't know how many people got those warnings because it doesn't track that.
The following is a message from the Santa Rosa Emergency Operations Center.
They also made calls to people's landlines, but only a third of those got through on the first try.
Evacuate immediately.
CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Jonathan Cox says with fires moving 100 yards a minute, chewing through phone lines and downing cell phone towers, officials couldn't keep up.
It was one of those instances where the disaster was moving faster than literally people could communicate.
Up in the hills above Santa Rosa, the massive flame front has passed, leaving Greg and Christina Wilson, the couple who hid in their swimming pool, wet and freezing, their lungs burnt.
You know, I thought we would die.
Exhausted and no longer able to support herself, Christina lies on a narrow concrete ledge. The deck around her burned away hours ago.
You know, you're kind of in survival mode, and I'm not sure my brain's even thinking of anything else. It's just watching that house burn, and we're just hugging each other on the ground.
Then Greg hears something.
This low wail of a siren. And, I mean, it's, you know, it's just this low, quiet. And I'm like, honey, I think this thing's getting closer. And at that point, I got up and I'm talking like this, but I'm just waving, screaming, hey.
The Wilsons are saved by chance. One of their neighbors managed to call a cop she was dating who got CAL FIRE to save them. Rescuers drive the Wilsons to a hospital.
The last thing I remember, Christina was lying on a gurney. I was lying on a gurney with Max. And there was a nurse there saying, okay, I'm going to take Maximus. And then they said, and then we're going to knock you out.
Greg and Christina, covered in burns, are put into a medically induced coma. Nurses have to move them to another facility because even the hospital catches fire. Their dog, Max, is alive but is nearly blind.
I have to say I'm very impressed with my wife. She didn't panic at all. I mean, the only thing you're worried about, you know, is her.
You know, you just kind of do what you do to survive, and we wanted her to live. So.
At this point, firefighters still aren't even thinking about putting out blazes. They're just trying to save as many people as they can. But there are only so many firefighters. And that mutual aid system, where neighboring counties tap each other when they need help, CAL FIRE's Annalee Berlew says it's breaking.
Sonoma's depleted. They have a major fire going. They call Napa. Napa has a major fire going. They don't have any resources to send. They call Lake. Lake County is depleted. They have a major fire going. So they call their closest neighbor, Mendocino. Mendocino has a major fire going. They don't have any resources to send.
Berlew doesn't have anyone left to draw from. And that map in her war room, there are so many fires, she's all out of magnets. She's using Post-it notes instead. And the nearest additional firefighters are hours away.
All these counties that are touching each other, because that's where the weather event went through, right, are all impacted with their own disaster.
That weather event means more counties are getting hit by hurricane-force gusts of up to 80 miles per hour. And people are continuing to call 911, reporting electrical problems, surging power lines, and explosions. And they're not just sparking new fires. They're preventing first responders from doing their job because they're not supposed to touch or even drive over a power line until electrical workers can guarantee the line is dead. We ask Unit Chief Berlew why CAL FIRE didn't consider asking the utility to shut down the power grid.
That is not something that we have historically done.
But CAL FIRE can do this. They do it in Southern California. CAL FIRE's Jonathan Cox says it's just not procedure in this part of the state.
Our world that we operate in is very procedurally driven, policy and procedurally driven, right? We're one cog here in the large California cogwheel.
This decision may have proven critical as the fire spread north to Mendocino County.
Vegetation fire, power lines down.
1822, I have two calls pending. One of them is power lines down across the road.
Remember that Highway 101 running through Santa Rosa? If you follow it 70 miles north, the towns start getting further apart, the farmlands more spaced out. In the early morning hours, a woman in a small town called Redwood Valley finds herself surrounded by fire. She calls 911.
Do I need to evacuate my house and kids?
I don't know, ma'am. If it's that close.
Throughout the night, this is a pattern. 911 operators can't give people clear directions on which way to flee. They tell them to shelter in place, to wait for a knock on the door, to drive through flames. Nobody seems to know what to do.
I've been trying to call 911 for the last 15 minutes and nobody's answered.
Ma'am, I understand. There's a lot of fires all over the county, so the best thing I can do is take whatever action you feel is necessary and appropriate, okay?
Okay, could you tell me, who do I call to find out how close and where, what I need
no
to do?
No one. No one. Ma'am, literally, there are multiple fires in the county right now. We're sending.
Just down the road from this caller, Redwood Valley Fire Chief Brendan Turner is directing his crews, trying to get residents to safety. He's pulled over at the bottom of a gated dirt driveway, making calls for more fire engines. The smoke billows around him, making it hard to see. Then someone walks out of the darkness toward him.
He said he needed help. So I got him over to the back of my patrol. And at that point, I was realizing that he had had significant burns to his hand as well as his face. And I asked him his name, and he kind of cocked his head to the side, which the, Brendan, why are you asking me this? And that's when I realized that I knew whoever this person was. And when he told me his name, my heart just sank.
His name is John Shepherd. He tells Turner that he got separated from his wife and two teenage kids. They're still up there in the fire.
You know, I know his family very well. I've known his mom. I grew up with him. Know the whole family. And that was hard.
In a town as small as Redwood Valley, everyone knows each other. For his firefighters, those aren't just three victims up on the hill. They are their friends and neighbors.
This was another one of those areas where I was extremely concerned for the safety of the responders also, because they were, they were going to make it up that hill one way or the other.
Turner has to make an impossible decision.
And at one point, I had to kind of pull him back a little bit and say, we have to wait until this passes a little bit before we get up there. We're not able to help other people if we become victims.
As soon as the flames pass, Turner sends his firefighters up the hill. Among them, 23-year-old Garrett Johnson, who also knows the Shepherd family. Garrett finds the mom and her 17-year-old daughter, Cressa.
When we got up there, they were both conscious, alert, speaking with us. So I did have high hopes for them.
While they wait for an ambulance to arrive, Johnson and the other firefighters dress their burns and give them oxygen. It's still too dark and smoky to get a helicopter onto the valley floor to airlift them out.
The mother was slightly declining as we were taking her off the hill. From my assessment, I thought the daughter was the lesser of the two injuries. Turns out I was wrong.
The Shepherd parents survived with severe injuries. But Cressa, an aspiring artist and a junior in high school, underwent multiple surgeries and ultimately died at a hospital. Her 14-year-old brother, Kai, who loved wrestling in the San Francisco Giants, he didn't make it off the hill. As the sun rose that morning over Redwood Valley, Chief Brendan Turner was high up on the west side of the valley.
So I had a vantage point of basically the entire area on the valley floor that had burned. And it was surreal. It was hard to imagine what I was seeing. You know, again, it's the community that a lot of us have called home for a long time. And to witness that amount of devastation and still not know, you know, how many people we had missing. It wasn't, it was gut-wrenching to see that.
The fires took a massive toll. In the end, 44 people lost their lives, hundreds were injured, and more than 9,000 buildings burned down. It would take 3 weeks to contain them. And while the fires were still burning, people began asking hard questions. At this community meeting at Santa Rosa High School on October 19th, people get emotional. Nerves are still raw. Thousands of people are still evacuated from their homes, and a woman asks the Santa Rosa fire chief why she wasn't warned about the fires.
Why was there no notice at the start of the fire?
It's important to know that it took a little bit of time to realize what was going on, and there were alerts sent out. We had the EOC push out evacuation notices in the Fountain Grove area.
People wanted answers from authorities, and we had questions too. So while Suki was still out in the field reporting on these fires, Lisa Pickoff-White and I started asking for public records. We wanted to get our hands on the 911 calls from that night and get a minute-by-minute sense of what was actually happening on the ground.
What we found were that there were long gaps between when first responders called for evacuations on the ground and when those alerts actually were sent out to people in danger.
We talked to Aaron Abbott. He's executive director of the Sonoma County Dispatch Center that was taking 911 calls that night. We asked him about those delays and whether they could have cost lives.
We're sad about all the houses and lives lost as anybody, trust me. But, excuse me. But what you have to say is it's not an individual issue or decision. This is a system issue, a system. We as a system have to, like, put this together, right?
There's no question that first responders acted heroically that night. But systems broke down. Systems that you count on in an emergency were insufficient.
So the three of us went to the man in charge of emergency response in California. His name is Mark Ghilarducci, and he's head of the governor's Office of Emergency Services. Here's what he said when we asked what he thought the failures were that first night.
Look, under extreme conditions, massive wildfires, there's smoke, there's debris, there's a lot of activity that's going on. Decisions are having to be made. Your premise is a little bit like, hey, what was the failure? That's how you started this conversation off. What was the failure? Your pretense is already that there was a failure made. The truth of the matter is that there's a lot of cascading challenges to have to deal with these kind of events.
But isn't that like what your office is all about? Situations that are not the norm? We're supposed to have a system that can handle or at least be somewhat prepared for an emergency,
well,
right?
I would argue that the system did handle it and is prepared for emergencies. We've got the best system that exists in the world in our ability to respond to these kind of events.
Ghilarducci didn't want to call them failures. But days after we spoke to him, his office issued a report confirming that in Sonoma County, communication systems broke down, staff were not properly trained, and that the county should have used wireless emergency alerts, those Amber alerts that set off everyone's cell phones.
However, when we spoke to Sonoma County officials, they told us that they were worried about using those alerts because of mass panic and clogged roads. Ghilarducci says local officials tend to be overly conservative about warning people.
There's all these obstacles that they throw out in front of them. Oh, it's going to cause panic. Oh, it's going to be traffic. You know, oh, it may not get to the exact streets we're talking about. It may actually be broader than we want to do. I think that, you know, you can't, again, you can't let perfect get in the way of good enough, I guess you could say.
Officials are beginning to tackle many of the problems we uncovered through this investigation. There's state legislation pending that would create one standard for evacuation alerts throughout California. So if one agency asks another for a reverse 911 or a NICSL alert, they'll know what they're talking about. The federal government is looking at improving Amber alerts. And dispatchers in Sonoma County are already being retrained so that they know what to tell people who are trapped by fires.
CAL FIRE is still investigating the cause of these fires. But now, PG&E says there's a new normal, that climate change is forcing them to change the way they do things. PG&E says shutting down the electrical grid can cause its own problems, making it harder for first responders to communicate in an emergency, leaving key infrastructure in the dark, like traffic lights. But the utility is working with state officials to consider powering down portions of the electrical grid ahead of extreme weather to stop fires from spreading, like the utilities in Southern California already do.
Residents here welcome these changes, but many are still mourning and have barely begun to rebuild their lives. Meanwhile, fire season is already here. It never ends.
KQED's Lisa Pickoff-White, Marisa Lagos, and Suki Lewis are going to continue reporting on this crisis and the decisions and delays that may have contributed to so many deaths. If you want to go deeper, check out KQED's new special on their podcast, The California Report Magazine, and an interview with Suki on their new podcast, The Bay. Today we heard how the emergency response system broke down during these wildfires. On Wednesday, we're releasing a special podcast looking at another question. What next?
They'll be allowed to rebuild and, you know, they're going to do it again, but that a fire will come again there.
Do you think it's crazy for them to rebuild there?
Yeah, I do. At least the way they had it.
That's coming up Wednesday on a special podcast. Check it out. Our show was edited by Brett Myers. Thanks to KQED's Sonia Hudson and Peter Arcuni for additional reporting on these stories. Our production manager is Mwende Hinojosa. Our sound design team is the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. They had help from Kat Chuknet. Thanks to Dan Bergren and Sleeping Giant Records for additional music in this episode. Acting CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Amy Powell's our editor-in-chief. Our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camerado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Ledson, and remember, there is always more to the story.
Hi there, I'm Andy Donahue, Reveal's managing editor. We've spent a lot of time over the last year and a half investigating the new era of hate that's sweeping across America. It's one of our newsroom's top priorities. Right now, we're working hard on finishing up a new investigation, which we'll be rolling out soon. But in the meantime, there's a way to keep up with our work. Each week, our reporters put together an email newsletter with their latest findings, interesting trends, and recommended reads from other publications. It's called The Hate Report. Signing up for it is easy. Just text HATE to 63735. We'll add you to the list. Again, text HATE to 63735.